Today's podcast is brought to you by Newspapers.com, your portal to the past. If you're like me and can't get enough of untold stories and forgotten tales, you're in for a treat. Newspapers.com has nearly a billion pages of historical newspapers dating back to the 1690s, and you can search them all in seconds. It's a treasure trove waiting for curious minds like yours. And with papers from across the US, UK, Canada, Australia, and beyond, Newspapers.com is the ultimate resource to unearth the stories that shaped our world. And here's something special for our history-loving listeners. Newspapers.com is offering an exclusive discount. Use the code HISTORYUNPLUGGED and get 20% off your subscription. That's promo code HISTORYUNPLUGGED, one word, at Newspapers.com. It's like having your own time machine to explore the stories that made history come alive. One more time, HISTORYUNPLUGGED, promo code at Newspapers.com. Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, the unscripted show that celebrates unsung heroes, myth busts historical lies, and rediscovers the forgotten stories that changed our world. I'm your host, Scott Rank. The Titanic was a luxury vessel and the largest movable man-made object of its time. It sank on April 15, 1912, off the coast of Newfoundland in the North Atlantic. Over 1,500 of the 2,240 passengers and crew lost their lives in the disaster. The Titanic is considered a cautionary tale of the arrogance of builders that their creation could be completely impervious to harm. It was also a perfect storm of events that happened at once. You had some of the wealthiest and most powerful people on board at the time, like John Jacob Astor, the hotel magnate. The founder of Macy's was there. You had some of the most prominent fashion designers on board, aristocratic families. And as it's been depicted in films, a lot of class conflict came about with the first, second, and third class passengers. But beyond just a story of disaster, I think that the Titanic story still draws an emotional response from people a century after its sinking because it shows some of the best and worst of humanity. You have people acting bravely and with perfect calmness. They're laying their lives down so that others can live, knowing they're only a few minutes away from death. Then you have others who act cowardly and are willing to shoot others so they can get their place on the lifeboat. I mention this all because this is a preamble for a series I'm going to do on the Titanic with a co-host, Veronica Hinke. Veronica is the author of a forthcoming book called The Last Night on the Titanic, Unsinkable Drinking, Dining, and Style. In Veronica's book, she chronicled dozens of stories of those who were on the Titanic, and she also tried to painstakingly recreate menus and recipes, meals, cocktails, and drinks that would have been on the ship to really get a sense of what the lived experience was like there. What we're going to be doing in this series is spending each episode focusing on a person or a group of people and seeing what their lives were like before they got to the Titanic, whether they survived or not, and what their experience was like when the ship was going down. We'll look at bakers, artists and writers, popcorn vendors, cooks, helpers, those who rescued others who were going down with the ship and laid down their own lives, like Molly Brown, trendsetters, fashionistas, hoteliers, the musicians, those who played as the ship was going down, doctors, and also swindlers, those who were preying on wealthy widows, hoping that they could get a place in their will. So we're going to be looking at all these different people, and something that Veronica did was pair a recipe of food or drink with each class of people, and something that actually would have been served on the Titanic, in order to approach history from a culinary perspective. And this is an idea that really isn't that far out there. I had a guest on the show about a year ago, Ken Albala, who studied cuisine and history in Roman, medieval, and Renaissance times, and has made and consumed food of that time period, and how it gave him perspective on what it would be like to be a medieval peasant when you were eating bread with coarse grain. Well, Veronica says the same thing. She says when she ate the tripe soup that a third-class passenger would eat, or when she had the desserts that a Edwardian lady would consume in first class, she describes it as helping her transport her back to the Titanic and at least get a small sense of what it would be like to be there. So in the show notes for this episode, we'll have the full recipe that we mentioned in the recipe spotlight. So if you really want to dive in and recreate in your own small way what it was like to be on the Titanic, you can at least do that with some of the food and drink we mentioned. So I hope you enjoyed this series with Veronica Hinke. All right, Veronica, welcome to this series.
Thank you, Scott. I'm really looking forward to talking with you about these incredible stories of these amazing survivors and the people who fought for their lives. And I'm so grateful for this opportunity to further their stories. They've just been incredibly inspiring to me, and I hope that they can inspire others.
Yeah, we're going to get into a lot of different types of people who are there, people that wouldn't typically think of those who are on the Titanic bakers, popcorn vendors, writers, trendsetters, millionaires, doctors, even a few swindlers, people who marry rich widows and the like, which you can kind of expect when there's a lot of rich people gathered together in one place, there'll be those there to exploit it. And before we get into the why of why you decided to research this project and what we're going to discuss, what do you think is your absolute favorite Titanic story from everything that you've researched?
Wow. I don't know where to begin. I loved every single one of these stories. Each of these stories, Scott, just took me through a journey, an incredible journey, and a time for me personally. Hope you don't mind if I get a little personal here.
Go for it.
Okay. I just want to share there was a real purpose to me in researching and writing this book. And when I did, I had just gotten started and went to work one day, and someone called me and said that my mother had died suddenly at 74. She was in perfect health. It was completely unexpected. 6 months later, I was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. I have never experienced a year quite like the one that I just experienced. And at the same time, you know, with other things happening as well, of course, as we all have, you know, our personal trials and challenges, to leave work and go home and focus on the book and such a challenging topic, delving into these horrific, nightmarish experiences these poor people had, and to find a way to truly honor them in the written word, and now thanks to the podcast, to telling people about it through the internet. So to do that was such a challenge, and I found it very challenging. And one day a friend said to me, you know, this is no mistake that this happened, that all of this is happening at once. Each person's story that you're delving into is rich with inspiration, and each one of those people that I studied helped me get through what I was going through, and to still find the strength to sit down at the computer every night and to go to the library on the weekends and read through probates and go through all of the extensive research that I did. Each one of those stories were like the wind beneath my wings. But if I had to pick one story, it's about someone who didn't travel on the Titanic at all, but he mailed a letter from the Titanic. He was super excited to be there, seeing off his wife's uncle, and he sent a letter. It was the first letter to be sent from the Titanic, sent it home to his wife, and I think just the act of him doing that really daylights for us the social significance of this great ship at that time, that he was just on board for a little while, and he took the time to take Titanic stationery and pen a letter to his wife. And then in stepping off in Southampton before the ship sailed, he in fact survived the Titanic. He was a survivor himself, and a horrible circumstance happened to him afterward. His uncle that he was seeing off, his wife's uncle, he did survive. And in the 1940s, this man, Paul Danby, who wrote the first letter from the Titanic, he was killed in a Nazi concentration camp. He died at Sobibor. And to me, that Holocaust connection to the Titanic is just sort of a collision of sorts of two just magnificent, incredible pieces of our world history. And it's told amazingly in the story of Paul Danby.
Yeah, and we'll get to him later. He really has an amazing story. And I wonder, when you were looking at stories like this, what angle were you hoping to look at to have a fresh perspective on the Titanic, since this is something that's been studied laboriously by many people over the years?
So the focus was how to extrapolate what originally was a 250-word magazine article in honor of the 100th anniversary in 2012, and the focus was on wines and cocktails, and how to turn that into a book. So the people that I decided to look at were the people who had ties to food. In the case of Paul Danby, for example, the man we just spoke about, his uncle was included in the book because he wrote a letter home to his wife detailing the divine lunch that he had had on that first day on board the Titanic. And he talked about the draft Munich lager that was on board by the company Wrexham Lager, Wrexham Brewing Company. And those were the people, for the most part, who we really put under a microscope and looked at the details of their life. Who were these people? Because there were so many incredible people. How do you define which ones to look at? So we looked at those who had ties to the food, people who had tucked away a menu and managed to carry it with them onto the Carpathia, which rescued survivors of the Titanic in the wee hours of Monday morning, April 15th. We looked at people who had jobs in any kind of food-related activities, and even off the ship, like Popcorn Dan, the gentleman from the area where I grew up, Merrill, Wisconsin. He operated a popcorn cart on Main Street at home, not on the Titanic, but at home he did. So we kind of found a way to, as I said earlier, to extrapolate and look closely at who were these people. Because so much of what we can tell about them tells us about what life was like back in the days of the Titanic in 1912.
One aspect that I'm curious about in terms of historical perspective is that in this series we'll have recipe spotlights where you have a food or drink that you pair with a particular person or a group of people. How do you think researching the food and drink consumed in the Titanic gave you insight into what it was like on the ship? And I should mention with a little bit more what I mean by this question. I had a guest a long time ago on this podcast who looked at culinary history. He would see what ancient Romans or medieval people ate and would try to recreate bread recipes from the medieval period or drink spiced wine from the Roman period. It helped him to imagine what it would be like to live at that time. And sure. Did you feel anything like that of eating or drinking what people would have actually consumed on the ship? Did that do anything for you in that sense?
Absolutely. You know, there were so many telltale signs from the research that I went through. And I just mentioned one point a little bit earlier about the draft Munich lager and that Adolphe Selfeld had drank that at lunchtime, or he could have. We don't know for sure if he did drink that. But the fact that Adolphe even wrote a letter detailing the whole menu to his wife tells me we're not the first foodies, right? We're not. This is not some new concept that people are in love with their foods and they look forward to their meals and they, you know, make a big deal of them. In fact, you know, the Edwardians actually might have celebrated food and dining even more so than we do, certainly much more elaborately. But I don't think that's something new to us. We might have, you know, so many food television shows and, you know, plenty more recipes to choose from these days. I'm sure we do. But it was just as important to the Edwardians as it was to us.
Were there any recipes that really stuck out to you for any reason? Maybe it was something that sounds really strange because it's not something we do, but you were pleasantly surprised or stuck out for a different reason?
Yes, there definitely was. I'll get to that. But first, you know, I have to say there were so many just wonderful recipes that came out of this collaboration with the different chefs. We spoke with home cooks. You know, we have a woman from Murraysville, Pennsylvania, Marjorie Beretta. And I remember speaking to Marjorie on the phone about a year ago on a cold winter Sunday. And she was so delighted to hear from me and tell me about her recipes for things like artichoke bottoms and salmon mousse, things that she had developed into recipes based on the last first class dinner on the Titanic. And she had a dinner party for her friends. And so those recipes, or a few of them, are in the book. And I was just delighted to meet people like Marjorie. I loved the colorful spring pea souffle and spring pea soup duo. He calls it the spring pea duo that Michael Lashowitz, the Chicago chef, he's actually in Winnetka, a suburb of Chicago. He contributed these lovely recipes that really showcase spring peas well. And as you know, April, it was a springtime menu for the most part, or the menus were springtime menus on the Titanic because of the time of year. So we see, you know, rhubarb and spring peas, plenty of them. But the reason I love those so much is the bright green color. They're just spectacular, and they just would really add a great breath of fresh spring air to any Titanic party or any kind of mealtime for celebrating the recipes in this book. But if I had to pick one real specific one that really fits the bill with the way you described it, I would have to say tripe and onions. And not that I love tripe, but I had never really explored it much. And it was on the menu in third class. So we really wanted to have a study of tripe. We have several tripe and onion recipes. And by the time I finished talking with the people who were still making the tripe and onions that their grandparents had made in England, Australia, Ireland, you know, not just in the United States, but all over, I actually started to think this is a really neat dish, and I loved it when I tried it. You know, I test drove all the recipes and really enjoyed trying all of them, but I was more surprised than any other recipe by how wonderful and lovely the tripe and onions recipe was. And in addition to that, there was one tripe and onions recipe in particular where I actually developed a friendship online with a woman in Johannesburg, South Africa. And her recipe for tripe and onions from her family is featured in the book. And her name is Sonia Geyer. And we've become real good friends on Facebook and Instagram because of our connection with the book. And that's one of the neat things about this project. It was an incredible collaboration.
Hey everyone, Scott here. We're going to take a very short break for a word from our sponsors.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Something I'm interested in is all the human stories with the Titanic, because it seems like you see the best and the worst of humanity in this episode,
yes.
Which I guess could come out in any disaster. And that's something else you delve into. in terms of the best, if we look at that, sort of the gallantry and the bravery and the face of doom, are there any stories that stick out to you of somebody that was your favorite to research or somebody who most inspired you with their bravery?
Well, I was really inspired by so many stories. It was just incredible. The people who put others before them. But the one person I think that stands out the most is someone who consistently helped others. You know, when 9/11 happened and everyone didn't know what to think or what direction to go next, Mr. Rogers shared a really personal story with everyone about something his mother said to him. He wanted it to help people in the face of disaster. And she said to him, "Fred, when there's a disaster, always look for the helpers. There will always be people helping." And there truly were in this case. And one of those was the first person who comes to my mind when I think of that is Margaret Brown. Or Molly Brown. We know her today in popular culture as the unsinkable Molly Brown. It's kind of her moniker, or the way people kind of think of her. And it's mainly because of the reputation she built for herself of always thinking for others, even when fear was right in her face. She thought of things like encouraging the women in her lifeboat to row to keep warm. You know, a little thing like that. How many people would be thinking about that when their own life was in danger? Once aboard the Carpathia in the wee hours of the morning of April 15th, you know, we hear stories of her getting people together and galvanizing people to honor Captain Rostron of the Carpathia, who went through a very dangerous field of icebergs to get to the Titanic survivors. So I'm inspired incredibly by so many of these people. They really were the wind beneath my wings through an incredible year for me personally. But if I had to pick one person to tell you about right now, it would be Molly Brown.
And another reason I like history is there's plenty of negative case studies of what not to do. And I'm sure there's plenty of those people on the Titanic as well. Who stuck out to you on the other extreme of someone that you dislike the most in your research?
Well, by far, the one person who stuck out as a nasty scoundrel was someone who was on board the Titanic. And the reason he was on board the Titanic was quite ironic when you consider his fate. He was traveling back home. His farm in Kentucky was said to be affected by some severe flooding, and he was coming back from a trip to Germany. The reason why he went to Germany is because he had recently inherited an estate from a widow that he had befriended. And her name was Frau Hasse, and somehow he had Dr. Morawek is his name. Somehow Dr. Morawek, who was known for, you know, flirting and encouraging the young single ladies on the ship to spend time with him and commit to more time once they reached New York, somehow he had gotten Frau Hasse to turn over her whole life estate to him. They weren't even married, and they somehow became friends through their travels. She came and stayed with him for a while in the United States. She was from Germany, and he inherited her entire estate. So he was going to Germany to see what he could do with this villa. And, you know, there had to be lawyers involved because Frau Hasse had children and grandchildren and all sorts of people that claimed that it was their family estate. Well, the newspaper stories that I saw about this man, Dr. Morawek, he was known for inventing a tool for removing cataracts. Several reports claimed that this was not the first time that he did this, that he had, you know, done this before with other widows. And so to me, you know, he definitely stuck out as someone a bit nefarious compared to some of the heroes like Molly Brown.
Yeah, and we're going to see much more of Dr. Morawack and Molly Brown in future episodes. So if people are interested, we'll get way more into their story and probably about 24 other stories like that where you really see the full spectrum of humanity for good and for bad when they're thrown into such an extreme situation. All right. Thank you for giving us that setup. In the next several episodes, we're going to be looking at all the different types of people who are on the Titanic, various professions, people from various backgrounds, from third class to first class. And in the next episode, we're going to kick off this series by looking at the baker. See you there. All right. Well, that is the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. First of all, I'd like to thank the Knowlton's Rangers, and especially our spy masters, Baron Freyza, Carl from Norway, Chris from Maine, Moondoggy from Ohio, and Rick Knowlton. And I'll explain what that means in a second. If you like the show, please leave a rating review on the podcast listener of your choice, whether it's iTunes, whether it's Stitcher, Google Podcasts, whatever. Also, we have a Facebook page. You can join us there to keep up the discussion on latest episodes. And finally, if you really want to dig in deeper with this show, I encourage you to join the Knowlton's Rangers. The Knowlton's Rangers were an elite reconnaissance and espionage detachment of the Continental Army in the Revolutionary War, but it's also the name of the History Unplugged membership program. Learn how to join by going to patreon.com/unplugged. So here's what you get if you become one of the Knowlton's Rangers. If you join at the level of Scout, you can get early access to new podcast episodes, along with enjoying absolutely every single episode of the History Unplugged podcast ad-free. All 270 and counting episodes. If you join at the level of intelligence officer, you can also get access to premium episodes, like a multi-part series on the life of Audie Murphy, the most decorated combat soldier in World War II, or the 10-part series Ottoman Lives, a series that looks at the cast of characters that made up the Ottoman Empire, such as the Sultan, the eunuch, the harem servant girl, and the soldier. And finally, if you join at the level of spymaster, you get all the same stuff as the scouts and intelligence officers, but you also get a shout-out to you and or your business at the end of each episode, a 3-pack of hardcover history books, plus you will be put at the very front of the line for me to answer your question about history, and I can guarantee I will dedicate an episode that's about an hour long or so to your question. Sign up at patreon.com/unplugged. Again, that's patreon.com/unplugged. Anyway, those are the ways you can help out the show. Thank you so much for your support. Thanks for listening to the History Unplugged podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get your daily dose of all things history related, from ancient Greece to the Cold War. We'll see you next time at the History Unplugged podcast.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.